Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life is songs of grief with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. You temper all the times I've tried.
Hello, and welcome to Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Riley Smurl, a future law student with an interest in all things legal and illegal.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl, and I am just your dad.
That was good. Getting better at it.
I have to remember what I'm saying.
And
I'm
I do too.
Just your dad, not a dude. Yeah, you got to remember what show you're on, right?
Mm-hmm. And get them mixed up. So something very important in my life happened recently. And that's that Taylor Swift re-released one of her very first albums.
Oh, this isn't a big event.
Yes.
I mean, it's almost like graduation or going to law school or something like that. It's Taylor Swift re-released an album.
I mean, it's even bigger than those things to me, really.
Oh.
Just more important than those things. Who cares about graduation?
So you're a big T-Swift fan.
Yes, I'm a Swiftie. Is what we would be called.
Well, all right.
Yes.
I'm a not-so-Swiftie.
Well, that's all right. I can help you. So that was...
I do like the one she did with Bon Iver.
She did two with him.
Well, I only heard the one.
Well, there's one on both of her most recent albums. They're very similar, but
all right.
It's two. Also, I didn't know that Bon Iver was a band and not a person. Well, the more you know.
I think I did hear that, but I didn't know that up front. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just that guy singing with her.
I did too. Apparently he's Justin Vernon. And then Bon Iver's the whole band.
I didn't know if he was related to Bono.
No, I don't think so. I think no relation. No understandable relation. Understandable confusion, though, I suppose.
They could have been brothers, Bon Iver and Bono.
Well,
I guess
they're not.
the short answer is
they're not. So last Friday on April 9th, Taylor Swift re-released Fearless, which was her second album ever that originally came out in 2008. And as lots of, very experienced seasoned Swifties know, she's made a plan to re-record all of her first six albums. She currently has nine and she's re-recording the first six. And lots of non-Swifties have wondered why, what happened.
Why is she re-recording those?
Exactly.
What's the 420 on that?
The 411?
The 411?
Not the 420.
What's the 411 on that? Oh, 420 is when we blaze it.
Yes, not the 420.
I had those mixed up. Well, if you blaze it, then you don't know any information.
Exactly, so you don't know the 411. So Taylor Swift, basically, when she was 14, signed to a label called Big Machine. And this guy named Scott Borchetta saw her, kind of quote-unquote discovered her. It was a very, very new label at the time. They didn't have lots of clients, didn't have lots of artists, didn't have lots of money. But then she signed this original contract for six albums, and 14 years later, in 2018, she got to the end of those six albums. So she had published all six. She had made lots of money. She had made Big Machine a big recording label. Her back catalog was worth between $200 and $300 million, and that was almost the entire worth of the label.
That's a nice nest egg.
Yes. So she was the majority of this label's importance and money. But she decided at the end of this contract to sign with Republic Records and Universal Music Group, a bigger label, some might say. And also she knew that Scott Borchetta had plans to sell Big Machine because she was really the only thing he had going for him. So she was very excited about this initially. You know, she said she was excited. She was going to own all of her master recordings and she was going to make new music. But then Scooter Braun, who's a big celebrity manager, he manages like Justin Bieber, Demi Lovato, used to manage Kanye. He bought Big Machine for $300 million. And that included the rights to Taylor's first six albums. And instead of offering her the chance to buy back her masters She said they told her she could earn them back one album at a time for each new album she produced.
For them.
For them. Uh-huh. If she re-signed another 6-album contract with Big Machine, that now was owned by Scooter Braun, she could earn one back at a time.
Old Scooter figured he'd double his profits there, huh?
Precisely. And they claim this was a new way of... they said we were working on a new type of deal for our new streaming world that was not necessarily tied to albums, but more of a length of time. So they were trying to say, they didn't say she could earn one back one album at a time, but, you know, for every year or 2 years, length of time, number of streams, stuff like that, she could earn them back. But still didn't offer her the chance to buy back her masters.
So they were making her give them more that she would have had to buy back after she had completed this deal.
Exactly. So, I mean, they told her, you know, you can get these 6 back, but she didn't really know what would happen with the next 6 once she had recorded them, if she were to record them with them. And they told her she couldn't use her music in her performance at the American Music Awards in 2019 when she was named the Artist of the Decade. They told her she couldn't use them in a Netflix documentary Netflix was making about her that included lots of performances of those songs. They later said, we didn't say those things. No, we wouldn't say that because they can't tell her she can't do those things, which we'll get into later. But Swift said basically they were telling her, be a good little girl and shut up because, you know, either make more music for us and you'll get your music back or stop talking about us and you won't get it back. So.
And she did not want to shut up.
She did not want to shut up and she did not want to work for them to earn her music back because she did not like Scooter Braun.
Well, I think it is very clear why. Swiftie.
Yes. So instead, her contract said, well, starting November of 2020, you can re-record your first 5 albums. And I think that the 6th one wasn't included because it had just come out in 2017. And I think there was a 5-year, it had to have been at least 5 years since the album had come out before she could record it again. So they had said starting November of 2020, she could re-record her first 5 albums and then she would own these new versions, which she has started to do.
And but she did also come up with some clever ways of keeping them from making money off of her, off of owning those albums against her wishes.
Right. She wouldn't let them license it to any third party, you know, movies, commercials, stuff like that, mm-hmm. because she knew if they licensed it, then they would get the money from it because they still own them.
So, and how, if they own the songs, how did they have the way of how did she have the way of keeping them from being able to license them?
From what I understand, and maybe we can get more into this going into more IP law and stuff like that, but pretty much copyright for music was intended to protect artists writing their songs. So even if you a company owns a recording of a song, they don't necessarily own the song. The artist is supposed to always maintain the copyright for the particular song, the original writer. But, you know, they can... Copyrights and compositions are not the same thing as sound recordings. Okay. So she has a copyright as the original writer, creator of composing it. And then they have the owning of the recording.
So she can say who can use it. She can't keep them from, like, selling it for streaming or something
right.
like that. But she can keep them from selling the songs to other people or from using it in movies and things like that.
Right. So she can still, you know, she can't stop them from putting it on Spotify and streaming it and then making money off of her streams, which I think if I saw correctly, there was about $8 million of unpaid royalties that they should have paid her from the music they made from her streams. But it was after she left that company. So they made $8 million off of her streams, without her even making any money off of them. But she, you know, she can stop them from using it in something else. Because I guess it's the using of the song. There's two different things going on there, I guess.
It's just playing the song itself, and then there's licensing the use of the song to other people.
Right, which I think you would usually have to have an agreement from the writer and the people licensing it, like your label. And usually that'd be the same person making that decision. Usually your artist is still working with that label. So they'd say yes to both.
There's basically 3 different types of licenses in play here. There is the mechanical license. Isn't that what that's called? As far as the song itself, the recording.
Mm-hmm.
there's the sync license, mm-hmm. which is if you want to say somebody says, look, there's this Taylor Swift song. It fits perfect in this movie I'm making. And I want to use that because it matches the same feel as what I'm doing in the movie. And so there's a sync license that you can sell when it's being used as part of a movie because they're not really playing the whole song.
Right.
They're just playing a part of it. And then there's the composition license.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I have the right technical names for each of those, but it's you wrote the song, and so you have a license for that. So there's three different licenses that are in play. And while she only had one of the three, she was able to keep them from using it anything other than just playing the music, streaming it, you know, things like that.
Right. Yeah. And that's, I guess, how they were able to, and how she was able to maintain, because she did end up performing a compilation of all those songs at the AMAs in 2019, because there's the whole other issue of performance and who has the right to license a performance and also perform the work itself. And I guess your copyright holder has the exclusive right to perform the work in public or to license others to perform it, which includes in movies, in theater productions, or playing a CD in public or showing a film in public. All of those are performances as well. And she is still, as the composer, still has that right. The only thing tied to the label owning it and the publishing rights, I guess, is what they call that, the publishing of it, is the money that comes from publishing it, streaming it, selling CDs, stuff like that.
Well, and I think that the music industry itself, if you think about how it has grown and what it has turned into, it's totally different than it was, say, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And 50 years ago sounds like a long time, but that was 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't that long ago. I was around then, so...
I wasn't.
That can't be that long ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, and if you think about the 70s, there was a lot of good music in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And but what happened is, back then, in those days, music only had two outlets. It was your records or the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And of course radios actually didn't have to pay anything. They could play your music on AM or FM channels and not have to pay any royalties or anything. And in a way, they were ads for the songs to sell records.
Mm-hmm.
So most of these bands, they would get their money from selling records. That was what everybody did, was buy albums or buy the singles, whatever it was, depending on your eras. Back in the, you know, 50s and 60s, they were buying a lot of singles. As they progressed into the 70s, you're more buying albums.
Mm-hmm.
Then eventually you had 8-track tapes. Then you had, cassette tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had CDs.
Right.
And now we're streaming it. So that's what the evolution of music has been. So there's not the money in the physical manifestation of the music, you know, like
right.
the album.
Yeah.
So they would just go out and tour some to promote their album, to get people to buy their album. But the band's real money, the singer's real money, came from the selling of the album.
Mm-hmm.
Now...
That's not true.
Yeah, now they release an album so that you'll come to see them when they tour, because
exactly.
their money comes from the touring.
Yeah.
So it's done a 180.
Yes, there's a whole debate around streaming services and how much artists make off... streaming their songs through them, because really, I mean, you could put your songs on Spotify like Taylor Swift has and get billions of streams and not make billions of dollars. You make like tenths of a cent pretty much
right.
on every stream.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to make billions of listens and billions of streams to make a decent amount of money like you would normally off of releasing like a physical album, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah, well, it's harder to keep up with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you do that? There's so many different services and so many different ways music can get out. And, of course, you had the big thing that came out when all the music being online first started with, who was that, Napster?
Mm-hmm.
That was the one that you could go to Napster and download songs, and all these people were burning free CDs
mm-hmm.
for themselves from all this, and
yeah.
nobody knew what to do,
because right.
they'd never dealt with this before.
Yeah.
And the government wasn't prepared, and the government is one of the slowest bodies to ever enact anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they certainly weren't going to jump on it and be proactive. They were going to wait and have meetings and discussions and go home on recess and things like that before mm-hmm. they were ever going to do anything.
Yeah.
So it was, as the music changed so fast, it created a real problem in licensing and protecting artists.
Right. It also, I mean, became a bigger deal when you went from having bands that were pretty much just your four artists and maybe a manager that were recording in a studio they would rent out for, you know, a week or so and mm-hmm. put it out themselves, to these giant labels with producers and managers and composers. And now you have 10 people that write a song and give it to another artist to sing it. You have artists that don't even write music. They just perform music other people have written.
Mm-hmm.
You have sound producers and all those kinds of people that make sounds that instruments don't even make anymore. So there are all sorts of people involved in the making of music process now than were, you know, 30 years ago.
But there's one thing they all have in common.
What?
They all want to get paid.
Yes. They all want money.
So somebody has got to keep track of all that.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer exactly how that came about, we've got that in the second part. But first, I would like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
Who is it?
Who is it?
Who is it?
Who wants to approach the
who
bench?
Who wants to approach the bench?
Why, it's a brand new sponsor to Court Appointed that we are proud to have on board. And it's June's Journey, which is a video game that can be downloaded free on your phone.
You sound so old talking about phone games. It's a hidden object murder mystery game. It's free to download. It's a mobile game. It's putting your powers of observation to the test, not to mention your memory and logic skills.
And the artistry in this game is what really impressed me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just slung together comics. These are beautiful portraits that they're using. And you've got to find these hidden objects to progress through the different scenes. And as you find them, then clues are found
mm-hmm.
to reveal a murder that has taken place.
Yes. You play as June Parker, who's an amateur detective investigating the mysterious death of her sister.
That's right. And then new chapters are added each week. Now, this game has been around for about 3 years. And so there are thousands to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is there murders, but there's bootlegging, there's mafia. There's lots of different versions of it that you can go through and try to solve the mystery while finding the hidden objects.
Mm-hmm. They have over 30 million fans across the globe all coming together to awaken their inner detectives, find these images.
Now, we've been playing this game, and it's like, before I know it, I'll be playing it. Before I know it, I'll look up, and an hour has gone by.
Yep.
And you get so into it, and it not only tests your skills of perception and finding the clues, but it also works with your memory, because
mm-hmm.
if you remember where some of these things were, you can move through it faster and get bigger bonuses
right.
and move along.
Because sometimes these objects change in the same scene. You got to find new clues in different spaces, but some of them stay the same. So you got to remember where they were so you get that time bonus.
But I know that I'm not a big gamer myself, but I found this very fun.
Yeah.
And it's, if you've got time to kill, it's a lot better than playing solitaire.
Yeah. And it makes me feel like I can, you know, it still makes me think. So I'm relaxing and playing a game, but still using my brain.
And you'll learn little tricks as you go. Like I didn't know for a while that you could expand the screen, and then also that the words that you're, the objects you're looking for will fade out and fade in as you,
mm-hmm.
as that object is in the screen that you're looking at, you know, in the area of the picture
mm-hmm.
that you're looking at. And, so that kind of helps you out once you learn some of these little things.
Yeah.
We would highly recommend that you try June's Journey. Like I say, it's free to download at your Apple App Store or Google Play.
So what was the, you had vaguely mentioned the law that brought these ideas into place.
Well, believe it or not, you would think that as long as music's been around, that this would be something that would have been thought about a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
However, it was 2018 that was a historic year for copyright law in the United States. The need to reform music licensing had been acknowledged for years, but music licensing was notoriously complicated. songwriters and recording artists, publishers and labels have been frustrated by the various rate-setting processes of a music licensing system. It was becoming ever more complicated, with additional layers were added in response to progressive technology like digital music services, libraries, and individual listeners. They were bothered by the lack of clarity regarding protections of pre-1972 recordings. So, in 2005, this is what they started. In 2005, the Copyright Office continued to urge music law reform. So this is when the movement started for this 2018 law. Mm-hmm. It started in 2005, and it came together to form the MMA, which is the Music Modernization Act. So the MMA changes the law for licensing of musical works and pre-1972 sound recordings, as well as the distribution of sound recording royalties to producers, mixers, and sound engineers. So see, they got included in besides right. artists and all that kind of stuff. The MMA is organized into three separate titles. Title 1 of the MMA makes it easier for digital music services to license music and for rights holders to get paid when their music is streamed and downloaded online. It addresses the inefficiency of the song-by-song licensing system for the mechanical reproduction and distribution of musical works embodied in phono records by digital music providers. So the MMA changed the law for licensing musical works and pre-1972 sound recordings, as well as the distribution of sound recording royalties. The MLC, which will be funded, this is the group that they formed to handle this. Mm-hmm. It's the MLC. It will be funded by digital music providers, and it will also collect and distribute royalties and identify musical works and their owners for payment. It will also be responsible for creating and maintaining a free public database of musical work and sound record ownership information. To ensure oversight and accountability, the MLC is designated by the U.S. Register of Copyrights and Director of the U.S. Copyright Office. It must be a non-profit organization.
Interesting.
Now, the Title II of the MMA is the Classics Protection and Asset Act, which addresses the anomaly in the U.S. copyright law related to sound recordings prior to the MMA. U.S. sound recordings created before February 15, 1972, were not covered by federal copyright law, although foreign sound recordings already were. So if you recorded like in the U.K., you came under U.K. copyright law.
Sure.
Right. But in America, they didn't do that. U.S. sound recordings were subject to an array of state laws, creating inefficiency, confusion, and litigation. The MMA brings pre-1972 U.S. sound recordings under the umbrella of the federal protection, preempting any existing state law that may have covered such work. So that's what they did, was basically pass a federal law that encompasses everything and overrides any state law. Then Title III of the MMA is the Allocation of Music Producers Act. It addresses payment of royalties to producers, mixers, and sound engineers. It codifies an existing practice whereby copyright owners or artists may send to Sound Exchange, the performing rights organization that collects royalties from certain digital music, a letter of direction to distribute a portion of their royalties to producers, mixers, and sound engineers. So that's what that group was put together in order to do that and to make it so that everything goes to one coordinated office.
Right.
And you can find out who owns the things and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I thought was interesting is you might wonder, when enacting the laws in 1972 to protect sound recordings, why did they choose not to apply retroactive protections?
Right.
You know, why did they skip over that? Well, the 1972 federalization was a stopgap measure with a sunset provision. So Congress was in the midst of hammering out numerous stipulations, but they didn't go into effect till 1976. So here again, they started in 1972 working on it.
Yeah.
And it took them till 76 before they could put together a comprehensive law and pass it. And I guess you know, in a lot of ways, they just said that they may have intended to return to the issue later, but somehow it fell through the cracks. Plus, labels were pushing for federal protection. They didn't know where to go back and where to draw the line and what to do. So basically, they just started from where they started working on it, mm-hmm. 1972, and said at least we'll cover it going forward.
Right.
So the law that we were working under up until this 2018 law mm-hmm. was this Copyright Act that came about in 1976. Mm-hmm. And it's the one that established that why 72 was the cutoff there.
Mm-hmm. So then what changed in 2018?
Well, in 2018, that was when they passed the Music Modernization Act.
Gotcha.
And that's the one that put it under the copyright law mm-hmm. and established the group that will keep track of all that. Mm-hmm. And that you have to now, as an artist, if you want to copyright your song, you now have to go through that organization to do it.
That's what, you know, is weird to me about, as I was reading about copyright law and copyright rights, you have to register with the U.S. Copyright Office.
Right. Now you do.
Right. And that's what, you know, there are these rights and these limits and statutes and all that stuff within copyright law. But unless you register your work with the U.S. Copyright Office, they can't be enforced.
Exactly.
So you pretty much have to, like, register yourself to protect your work. Laws just don't apply to the work itself.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, you do have the rights.
Sure. Yeah.
But if you don't register it and someone starts using your song, you're going to have a hard time protecting it because you're not going to be, it's not going to recognize it. It said that, like, if you were going to do that, Music Copyright 101. Music copyrights also grant certain exclusive rights to the owners, one of the most important being the right to earn money from the intellectual property. This is called exploiting your copyright. Now, if you create a recording yourself or if you pay for studio time and session fees, you own that sound recording. If you work with a label, there's a good chance the label controls the copyright to the recording, at least for some set duration. If you wrote a song by yourself, you alone own that composition. So this is kind of touching on the Taylor Swift thing.
Right.
She may have had a label that owned rights to the song, but she still owned the composition.
Right.
If you wrote a song with one or more people, you each own a portion of that song. You and your collaborators would then want to draft a document determining the splits, the percentage of the song each person owns. Mm-hmm. Like if there's two of you, is it 50-50?
Right.
Or did one of them just kind of help a little bit, so he only gets 20%? Mm-hmm. And then you got to register your copyright accordingly. Now, there are two types of music copyright. The composition, which is the music and lyrics, and the second is the sound recording, which is a particular recorded version of that music and lyrics. The compositions are usually owned by the songwriters and or publishers, and sound recordings are usually owned by the artists or labels.
Right. So that's where you have, you know, a 14-year-old Taylor Swift that got offered this contract that said, we'll own all six of your first albums, but you might make a bunch of money. And of course, she's 14. Mm-hmm. So she signs away the rights to all the recordings.
Right.
But she still owned the lyrics because, of course, she wrote all the lyrics herself.
Now, and also that was in 2014, right?
No, that was in 2004.
2004. So
yes.
That was prior to this,
yes.
Which didn't take effect till 2018. So
right.
It was still kind of loose out mm-hmm. there. So, when do you own your copyright? In the strictest technical terms, you own your musical copyright the moment you capture the composition or recording in a fixed medium. This could be something as simple as writing the melody or lyrics on a piece of paper or humming into a recorder. However, registering your copyrights with the U.S. Copyright Office entitles you to enhanced benefits. Most important of all, in a groundbreaking ruling, the Supreme Court mandated that registration with the USCO, the U.S. Copyright Office, mm-hmm. is required before you can file a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. So you can't sue anybody if you don't have it registered. Mm-hmm. Registering early can earn you $150,000 plus attorney fees per deliberate infringement. So all you have to show is the infringement. You get back your attorney fees and $150,000.
Wow.
So now they said, does the poor man's music copyright actually count as proof? And you know what they're talking about with the poor man's copyright?
What?
I heard you all on a Still Buffering episode talk about that. You were talking about trademarking something.
Mm-hmm.
And you said
write it down and
mail it to yourself, and then you can. And I always wonder, why does that work? What the hell does that do?
Does it work?
Well, first, no, it doesn't work. But here was the logic behind it. If you mailed it through the U.S. Postal Service, they stamped it with a date. So that date would be proof that you had it, you wrote that or whatever on that date to make that yours. But I always thought, well, you could put anything in the envelope after you got it back, you know, after you received it in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
So how would that do? How would that prove it? Well, it has to remain unopened.
Oh.
So when you receive the letter you mail yourself, you store it in a safe place, your safe deposit box or something like that. And don't ever open it. And then if you ever need to prove it, you can pull that out and say, see there, it's stamped. And if you open this, you'll find my copy inside.
Huh.
But that doesn't work.
Right.
Now it might have pre-2018.
Right.
You could have offered that possibly.
But now you have to register it.
Now, if you don't register it, it doesn't count. Now, it says, why would you want to? Well, when you register, you have the ultimate leverage, which is what we just talked about, that anybody that infringes, you get that automatic benefit of doing that, that getting back your attorney fees and $150,000 per infringement.
Wow.
So I would want to be infringed on a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of $150,000 add up to a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I like money.
Yeah.
I don't have a money tree like Michael had, so I got to see. He told me that all lawyers get a money tree. That's the first thing after you
start. When do I get mine?
Well, you have to start your law practice, and then they give you a money tree to plant in the backyard.
I didn't know that was part of the deal.
Yeah.
Is it big enough of a money tree to pay back my law school loans?
Well, I guess so. It just depends on how big your tree grows.
I sure hope so.
I want to know if it's big enough that you can share it with your dad.
Well, now, got to cover those law school loans first.
So, if you want to legally register a copyright for your music, also all you budding musicians out there, now pay attention, you'll need to do that directly with the Copyright Office, or you can use CoSynd, that's C-O-S-Y-N-D. That's a service that handles all the heavy lifting for you. The advantage of using CoSynd is it's much more user-friendly than dealing with the U.S. government.
That makes sense.
So they kind of walk you through it. I'm sure there's a fee involved, but they get the basic information and fill out all the proper forms and do the filings after you sign it. So the things you'll need are the full legal names and country of citizenship or domicile of your co-authors, the full legal name and address of the owners of your copyright, the year of completion, date of release, if released, and the nation in which your copyrights were released. Audio files, if you are registering your sound recordings, audio files or lyric chord sheets, if you're registering just your compilations. Compositions. Yes. And now here's one where Taylor Swift would have come in too. How old do I have to be to copyright my music? It says there is no age requirement to copyright your music. However, while copyrights are governed by federal law, most copyright transactions are governed by state law. State law can differ from federal law in what minors can and cannot do with their copyright. This includes certain changes that can occur in some states when the individual who owns a copyright turns 18.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have come into effect with Taylor.
Right.
With our old buddy,
T-Swift.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what's interesting is even if this would have happened after this 2018 law act took place, the problems that she went through had to do mostly with just internal business dealings, bad deals and bad contracts. And, you know, she could have signed this contract again, but then the original owner of the label was going to sell the label again.
Right.
So pretty much, even if it's her music signing another contract that would say she could earn it back, it's all still being sold to someone else. Now you don't have artists just making their own music. Everybody's owned by somebody.
That's true. Everybody's owned by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to file a lawsuit because you have been infringed upon and you have properly registered your songs or compositions with the U.S.
Copyright Office?
Yes, the U.S. Copyright Office. Thank you. You can go to two different courts. You can either go to federal court. And in federal court, you can get $750,000 to $150,000 per infringement. or you can go to small claims court. Well, it's interesting. Like maybe you're not very big and it's not, you know, you don't, federal court is a big deal to go to federal court. Small claims court is not so intimidating and you don't even have to have a lawyer.
Yeah.
So you can go there. Now, I always heard the limit on small claims court was $5,000. So I don't know if this is special for this, but it says copyright owners could recover up to $30,000 per case with a cap of $15,000 in statutory damages per work infringed. So you can actually go to small claims court, which is not nearly as big a deal, and just show proof that you had it registered and that, you know, who violated you.
Right.
Those are some of the ins and outs between registering your own music and how the 2018 law came about.
Well, if only Taylor had been able to take advantage of that 2018 law.
Well, you know, but Taylor's not the only one that has run into this problem before.
Really?
And there's a couple of other famous musicians you might have heard of that had slight popularity in the past.
Like who?
Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney.
Well, I have heard of them.
You have, huh?
Yeah.
Well, some you may know about this and you may not, but they actually went, Michael Jackson went to his grave still in a feud with Paul McCartney over music rights. It seems that the Thriller artist and McCartney used to have a wonderful musical friendship that began in the 70s when they started to talk business. McCartney had offered Jackson the chance to buy Girlfriend for his upcoming album, to which McCartney just ended up releasing himself on Wings. Nevertheless, the two became friends, resulting in duet collaborations that created Say Say Say, the lead single on McCartney's Pipes of Peace album, The Man, and The Girl Is Mine, which hit the number 2 spot on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1983.
Wow.
Since Jackson was his friend, McCartney decided to offer some advice about getting into music publishing. McCartney had started to dabble in it after losing his stake in Northern Songs. That was the publishing company that he and former bandmate John Lennon had set back in the late 60s. Since he wasn't making any money from Beatles songs, he started buying the publishing rights from the other artists, such as the late Buddy Holly. Jackson actually jokingly replied, "One day, I'll own your songs."
Well,
it wasn't a joke, but so indeed, Paul McCartney had a hand in composing some of the most revered music of all time, and the ownership of most of Beatles' catalog, like I said, resided in with a group called Northern Songs. Now, that was a group formed by McCartney and John Lennon in conjunction with the late Beatles manager Brian Epstein and publisher Dick James. Following Epstein's death in 1967, Lennon and McCartney reportedly tried to renegotiate their publishing agreement with James, but were unsuccessful. So James subsequently sold the Beatles catalog, so he ended up being the controlling interest in it, and he sold it to ATV, which then ended up in the hands of Robert, now this is his name, Robert Holmes Acourt.
Well,
I thought it was like a misprint. I'm looking at it. Then I had to read it in a couple different places. His name was Robert Holmes Acourt. He was a billionaire Australian corporate raider who appeared to be willing to unload it for a price. So following the advice that his new friend had given him, Jackson reached out to an attorney who helped him buy the rights to the songs from the 60s that he was so fond of. But then in 1984... he told Jackson that the music publishing company, Sony ATV, was up for grabs. The company owned the rights to 4,000 songs, including tracks by Elvis Presley, the Rolling Stones, Bruce Springsteen, and 251 Beatles songs.
Wow.
But Branca had most definitely asked both McCartney and Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, if they were interested first, to which McCartney said that was out of his price range. Now, McCartney went through a very expensive divorce. I think it was around that time.
That makes sense.
So he couldn't afford the cost of it. Well, Jackson ended up buying the rights to all that, buying that whole set of songs for $47.5 million.
Gosh.
It was a very contested negotiation back and forth with this guy, and it was on and off several times before they finally did it. McCartney was clearly upset that the pop star was profiting off of his own songs and said in 2001, "He won't even answer my letters, so we haven't talked and we don't have that great a relationship. The trouble is, I wrote those songs for nothing, and buying them back at these phenomenal sums, I just can't do it. So later in 2006, facing a potential bankruptcy, because then Jackson was going through his own legal struggles, mm-hmm. and nobody was buying his music because of the legal difficulty that he was in and the insinuations that had been made about him that mm-hmm. were neither proven or disproven, but there was a lot of undisclosed settlements involved. Jackson agreed to sell half of his ownership back to Sony ATV. McCartney was already feeling betrayed initially. He saw a chance to get the publishing rights of his songs back. By 2016, Sony finally agreed to pay out $750 million to buy out half of the Sony ATV, which was owned by the Jackson estate, even after Jackson's death in 2009. This ended the fight between Jackson and McCartney. McCartney finally regained the Beatles song catalog right before his 75th birthday in 2017.
Wow.
So he now finally owns the songs that he wrote back in the 60s.
Yeah. What's craziest about that to me, though, is you said it was $47.5 million mm-hmm. for all those songs, you know, hundreds of Beatles songs, but also all the other songs.
Right.
And Taylor Swift's six albums alone was between $200 and $300 million.
Right.
So that's crazy, man.
Well, that's the world of digital music, I guess. And even though the Beatles songs are popular and, you know, the Rolling Stones mm-hmm. or Bruce Springsteen, it's mostly us boomers and stuff. I mean, yeah. there's a few people that are turned on to that music nowadays, but not nearly in the masses that they were then,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So you just never know. And, you know, money can divide up even the best of friendships.
Apparently so.
Yeah. Yeah, they were music collaborators, and so he advised him, take the chance to buy up rights when you get a chance. Never thought it would backfire
on him. Regretted saying that.
Yeah, I bet he did.
Well, now it's time for
legal
briefs. Okay, so we talked about this most recent album Taylor has re-released, not her most recent new album, Fearless. But even though this was written 13 years ago, do you know who it was written about, all the breakup songs and the mean, angry songs? What ex-boyfriend did Taylor write this album about?
I believe it was Joe Jonas.
Yes, it was. Your old buddy Joe Jonas.
Yeah, you know, you kept missing them when the Jonas Brothers would come visit us on Tybee Island. And
play rock band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd play rock band with us and I'd usually beat them, but, you know, they weren't bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
my final legal brief. Do you know what other kind of business entity Taylor Swift just in the past few months has gotten into a legal battle with that just recently ended?
Cardigans.
No. It was a theme park called Evermore Theme Park. Her most recent album is called Evermore.
Oh.
And they sued her for making her album name Evermore and said,
yeah.
This confuses people. You know, they go to research our theme park and your album pops up.
Oh, yeah, because all that publicity from Taylor Swift has got to be bad for their theme
right.
park.
Because so,
I've never heard of Evermore Theme Park.
Exactly.
But I've heard of Taylor Swift.
So
they should be sending her money and
yes.
thanking her.
So instead of, you know, taking this suit seriously, they sued her for millions of dollars, she countersues and says, well, you're playing my music without a license in your theme park.
Ooh.
So I will countersue you for a dollar, I want to say, or no money. Either one. She didn't get any money out of it. That was not her goal, but they dropped the suit after that.
Well, that'll teach them to mess with T-Swift.
Mm-hmm.
And guys have learned not to mess with her either because she'll sing about
you. She'll write songs about him.
Yeah, she won't sing about you in a nice manner either.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got one for you.
Okay.
Who do you have to file to get a copyright? Who do you have to file with to get a copyright on your music?
The U.S. Copyright Office.
Correct.
Woohoo.
Now, when was this law enacted that created this service?
2018.
And when was the law prior to that that tried to do it before a lot of these changes took place?
Well, they started making it in 1972, but it was enacted in 1976. Yes?
That is correct.
Woohoo!
And what great American graduated high school in 1976?
I don't know. You did?
Me! Okay. That's right. Thought I crossed you up there for a minute.
You did for a second. I had to remember how old you were. I didn't want to offend you if I was way off.
No, unfortunately, you're not way off. You're right on the money.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you just waited another, 24 years to come along?
Yep. Just 24.
Yeah, I had to wait for you a while. But it was worth the wait.
Well, thanks.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello. Welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is the word united. The last I checked, this was the United States of America. But we are about as far from united as far can get. We can't agree on anything. We can't agree on taxes, on masks, on economic stimulus, infrastructure needs. We can't even agree on what the truth is. Any truth. Because there is no truth. There are just competing facts that constitute variations of the truth. Mass shootings are back again, with great regularity. The COVID slowdown, it seems, has paled, and it's now open season on anyone, anywhere. What are we doing about them? Same thing we've done since Columbine. We're offering thoughts and prayers. Heaven forbid we do anything to limit guns, because anything that is done just constitutes the first step in taking them all away. And by God, that is our God-given right to carry a gun. So don't mess with that. Now, all of a sudden, after several years of gains and understanding, there seems to be brand new attacks on the LGBTQ community, especially transgender individuals. Let's do all we can to put them in their place and make sure they understand they don't deserve to live their truth. The rest of society gets to vote on that truth, for some reason. Is it because the general public is just scared of what they don't know or understand? The main question is, how does this hurt you? Let people live. Some states and cities are offering new protections at the same time others are making life harder and saying they don't exist at all. Then there is the whole COVID thing. Some people don't really believe in it. I guess the CIA killed those over 500,000 people that died from it, huh? Masks don't help. God will protect me. If God is your protector, then why do you feel the need to carry a gun? Because God is selective with his protection? So we run like hell to get everyone vaccinated, and now we have reached about a 50% wall, because there are so many that still ain't sure that this isn't some kind of government trick. They're going to implant something in us so they can track us or something. Or is it the other story, how they are aborting all those babies so they can turn them into vaccines? I don't want no abortion vaccine put in me. Again, facts, perverted facts, for the benefit of a narrative that is incorrect. Talks of forgiving student loans, which is tightening a noose around the economy of our country, is also met with resistance. Why would anyone be against people being forgiven of their student loans in order to grow the economy? These people can then go forth and prosper. Why, you say? Because, oh no, I paid mine, so that's not fair if everyone else doesn't pay theirs. Do you hear how regressive that is? Cavemen lived in caves. Is it not fair to them that we live in houses with electricity and running water? Of course not. It's progress. That makes life better for everyone. No one could foresee this problem, but here it is, so let's fix it instead of ordering all who labored under it to just live with it. In conclusion, I say welcome to the divided states of America. This country is at its weakest point it has ever been. Even during the world wars and depressions and energy shortages and protests, we still were a united country at the core, and we all knew things would get better. But not now. There is nothing positive on the horizon. It's more like every man, woman, and child for themselves. So buckle up. United we stand, but divided we fall. I think I read that on a bathroom wall somewhere, so it's probably not that important. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.